From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
Dominica's plans for associate membership of the EU gets the backing of one of their allies in London. CARICOM remains optimistic that Haitian's elections timetable has not slipped, and Jamaica's athletics chief says Merlin can run if she wants to. I'm Orin Gordon, and this is BBC Caribbean Report. Dominica's new coalition cabinet, led by Rosie Douglas, features some controversial names. The outspoken conservationist and activist Atherton Martin has been named Minister for Planning and the Environment. Another activist, well-known locally but who spent several years in Britain, lawyer Bernard Wilshire, has been given the post of Attorney General. Among some of the other key posts, Labour Party President Ambrose George is holding the office of the Finance Ministry, while the deputy political leader of the DLP, Pierre Charles, has the Ministry of Communications and Works. The cabinet is made up of both the Dominica Labour Party and the Freedom Party, as Matt Peltier reports from Roseau.
At a private closed-door session with the president of Dominica, 58-year-old Roosevelt Douglas took the oath of prime minister, making him the fifth prime minister since the country gained its independence on the 3rd of November, 1978. Addressing party officials and party supporters shortly after taking the oath this morning, Prime Minister Douglas said that the country had arrived at a major milestone in its history, hoping that the transition between the United Workers' Party and his government will be a smooth one, promising that the coalition of the DLP and the Dominica Freedom Party will do everything to ensure that the government is free and fair, a government for all Dominicans. His first address as Prime Minister was punctuated with a series of applause, especially when Mr. Douglas hinted that he was willing to continue with the work the United Workers' Party government had started once the projects were economically viable. Late this afternoon, Prime Minister Douglas announced that 10 ministers will be sworn in tomorrow, shared between the Dominica Labour Party and the Dominica Freedom Party. It was agreed by both sides that the leader of the Dominica Freedom Party, Charles Savre, will be sworn in as Minister of Tourism, and Education Ministry will go to Mr. Herbert Sabruch, the chairman of the Dominica Freedom Party. The 8 other ministries will go to the Dominica Labour Party. Prime Minister Douglas said he was molding his government on Germany, who had a very successful coalition government, brushing aside opposition critics who say the accommodation will fail.
Coalitions can be made to work. Coalitions have succeeded. Germany is today the most powerful country in Europe, and there's no reason why we cannot make this experiment work.
Outgoing Prime Minister Edison James will be sworn in as opposition leader tomorrow morning. In Roseau, for BBC Caribbean Report, Matthias Pelletier Jr.
Meanwhile, Guyanese-born British MP Bernie Grant, one of the closest allies of the new Dominican Prime Minister, has already begun sounding out EU officials on the prospect of associate membership for Dominica. Mr. Douglas has long proposed such ties with the EU because Dominica lies between the two French islands of Martinique and Guadeloupe and has close links with those islands.
Certainly within the next 2 months, I will take the first delegation to France to begin to make our plea as a country essentially of black people in the Caribbean, asking to be at least an associate member, if not a full member of the European Union.
Rosie Douglas. So I put it to Bernie Grant that the chances of associate membership of the EU look pretty remote.
Well, I don't think so. Rosie Douglas raised this with me some time ago, and at first I thought it was far-fetched. But his point was that countries like Turkey and Israel, who are not in Europe, but who border onto the European Union, they are able not only to get an associated status with the European Union, but they are also able to join or to apply to join the European Union.
But they are, if you like, in greater Europe. They're close to Europe geographically. Dominica is not.
Yeah, but the point is that Dominica is close to the European Union because Martinique and Guadeloupe, they have the European Union laws, and they are, of course, a part of the European Union. Anybody from any of the European Union countries can go to Martinique and Guadeloupe without any problem whatsoever. I'm a member of the International Development Select Committee of the House of Commons, and we visited France, and I put the question to the French Minister of Cooperation and Francophone countries, and he said, after consulting his officials, he sees no reason why they shouldn't apply and that there should be a special relationship with the European Union.
But will they go for it?
I can only go on what the French minister said to me. And this is minuted by the clerk of the committee and was confirmed by the clerk in a note to me. What I do know is that if we don't apply for it, you'll certainly never get it.
Some in CARICOM might argue that Dominica should be seeking closer ties with the EU within the framework of CARICOM through the Caribbean community.
Well, I don't dispute that. But I don't think that this is a position where people start to take nationalistic positions. Dominica, as an economy, is struggling, particularly in relation to the banana problem. And we can't stand on our high horse and make stupid political gestures.
Isn't there an element of wishful thinking in this idea of associate membership, though? Because I've heard very little you have said that sounds like a ringing endorsement from the Europeans.
You can be as cynical as you like, but I'm a politician, and I know that anything is possible in politics. But what I do know is that unless we test these issues, then we'll never get any further.
Bernie Grant, you're listening to BBC Caribbean Report. In New York, Brooklyn's African American and Caribbean communities are debating who should represent them in the U.S. Congress come elections in November. Jamaican-born politician Una Clark has been advised to shelve her plans. Mrs. Clark is likely to challenge the Congressman Major Owens in September's Democratic primary. Bevan Springer reports.
Many Caribbean Americans in New York are incensed over a letter penned by a coalition of Democrats urging council member Una Clark not to run against the incumbent African-American Congressman Major Owens in this year's elections. Congressman Owens has held the 11th congressional seat in Brooklyn, home of the Caribbean's largest expatriate community since the 1980s, when Barbadian Shirley Chisholm, the first black woman to be elected to the House of Representatives, retired from the political arena. The letter in question is signed by more than 20 elected officials and encourages Mrs. Clark not to challenge Congressman Owens, an act the officials believe will create division between the Caribbean and African American communities. Reaction has been fast and furious. On one side of the fence, Mrs. Clark's supporters argue she should not be denied the right to run. Others contend that given his seniority, incumbent Major Owens should be allowed to demonstrate his support of Brooklyn's Caribbean constituents, something he has recently vowed publicly to do. Such statements have been met with skepticism by observers, coming as they do in the light of his recent vote against trade parity for the region. Mr. Clyde Griffith is a former Barbados Consul General to New York. Mr. Griffith, who this week was appointed Executive Director of the Congressman's Brooklyn office, observed that the Congressman has brought millions of dollars to the community and is better placed to elevate Caribbean issues from Congress.
To bring services not only to the Caribbean community in the diaspora, but to bring legislation forward that would advance the interests of CARICOM countries. You just come up with a document focusing on Caribbean problems and Caribbean issues in the Congress. So I'm convinced that he's the better person.
Mr. Winston Tucker, a Jamaican attorney at law, is urging the community not to be swayed by the congressman's latest proposal to seek amnesty for millions of illegal immigrants in New York.
But for Una Clark, we would not even get to the point where he would even consider writing the legislation, because over the past couple of years, all that has happened that has come out of the congressional leadership to the Caribbean communities have been promises, promises, promises.
With election outcomes always a questionable matter, one thing is certain. Whoever is elected to Congress will be under serious pressure to champion the cause of the Caribbean region like never before. Bevan Springer, in New York City, for BBC Caribbean Report.
In the Bahamas, the radio talk show host and opposition politician Obi Wilchcombe has been sentenced to 4 days in prison for refusing to tell a court how he came to get the suicide note from John Higgs, the death row prisoner who killed himself last month. Mr. Wilchcombe cited journalists' protection of their sources. Higgs killed himself just hours before he was due to be executed. The CARICOM Secretariat remains hopeful that legislative elections in Haiti will take place on the 19th of March. The Secretariat's cautious optimism was expressed by their top officer responsible for foreign and community affairs, Albert Ramden, in an interview with BBC Caribbean Report. But as we reported last week, the registration problems could lead to yet more delays in the elections. This was the AP correspondent in Port-au-Prince, Michael Norton.
19th of March is what has been officially determined to be the first round of elections. Well, and so what if it's the 26th of March? And so what if it's the 2nd or 3rd of April? That is always a possibility. Nothing is firm and fixed in Haiti. And it's true that because of that, many people doubt that there will be any elections at all before the end of the year.
Michael Norton, speaking last week, I began by asking Ambassador Ramdin what were the areas in which aid for Haiti is most acutely needed.
At the moment, the registration of the voters is ongoing. It started on the 24th of January. We hope that that process, which is one of the most critical ones, will be finalized in a smooth way, effectively, so that as much as possible voters could be registered in this process. We know that the other issues with regard to the printing of ballots is on its way. The technical preparations are done right now, so we are in good confidence that the preparations are on its way with some minor difficulties in some areas in Haiti. We are at least hopeful that we can have the elections on the 19th of March, of course.
My next question to you was going to be, by how much has the timetable for the elections slipped?
I can't say anything at the moment about that, but I think that it is all in time for now. We have to see how, in reality, the registration works out. We have to see how preparations are done with regard to the education of the people, the program in that regard, the training of electoral officers, the mounting of the 5,000 polling stations, the voter stations, and we have to see how the police force and other agencies can be involved in securing peaceful, free, transparent elections in Haiti. That is the main effort at the moment. We do believe that it is cutting very short on the preparations, but given all the difficulties we know we have on the ground in Haiti, we are confident that at the moment we could maintain a situation whereby the Haitian government and the electoral board could have elections declared on the 19th of March. In a couple of weeks' time, within 2 or 3 weeks, a high-level carry commission will go to Haiti to discuss further arrangements. And after that, the electoral observers team will go. So we will get more and more involved in the on-the-ground process of the elections.
Ambassador Albert Ramdin.
I've also got some response and feedback from the athletes themselves, and it was very, very positive. So that, too, makes me feel a lot better. They didn't treat me like a criminal or anything, so which is good.
Jamaican track star Merlin Otte, after winning the 60 meters race at a track meet in Spain. Otte tested positive for nandrolone, and some athletes and officials had criticized the race organizers for letting her take part. The rules do not bar her, but athletes who test positive are expected to stay off the track. Adrian Wallace is the president of the Jamaican Amateur Athletics Association.
Well, the J3A is a member of the IAAF, and we operate within the rules of the IAAF. And as far as we know, there is no suspension or ban on Merlin Otte at the moment. So within the rules of the IAAF, we will continue to operate. Therefore, apart from physical, where somebody pulls you off a track physically by police or whatever, once she's invited to participate in a track meet and she accepts the invitation, I know of no other reason why she cannot compete.
Well, there are rules and there are conventions, and the convention is that an athlete would withdraw him or herself from competition until the question of his or her innocence or guilt is firmly established.
I am not aware of that convention. I know of many athletes who have continued to run after their federation has cleared them, and sometimes even as long as a year after, year and a half afterwards, whilst they have continued to compete, the IAAF continues with his processes through arbitration, whatever have you, and eventually a person is suspended, cleared, or banned. Individuals can take a decision that, heck, I don't want to compete, And other individuals could take a decision that since the rule allows me to compete, I'll compete. So it's a personal decision.
But does it matter that her participation is dividing athletes as well as officials, one official close to the Spanish organizers?
Obviously, you don't want that in the sport. People don't want to be divided. It's not politics. It is obviously not what one would like to see.
Adrian Wallace of the Jamaican Amateur Athletic Association, ending BBC Caribbean Report. This is Oren Gordon saying goodbye from London.